Philip, could you just briefly review where we are in terms of the data, in terms of continuation of anti-angiogenesis second-line therapy? We asked you to talk a little bit about the, you know, the MLN paper ended up getting published in the Lancet Oncology. I think there was another data set at ASCO looking at continuation of Bev, and then there was more data, just a subset analysis of the aflibercept study, the Valor study.
Yeah, I think the key points to make before I start think this is that in practice, people have been maintaining patients on bevacizumab beyond progression for a while now. It's not something which is new. And something which is behind that is the fact that people always believe that chemotherapy resistance is different than resistance to the anti-angiogenic agents, because the chemotherapy is targeting the tumor cells, and we believe in the clonal evolution, mutations, drug resistance, whereas the bevacizumab or other anti-angiogenic agents are targeting the endothelial cells that are our normal cells that tend to be more genetically stable and more able to really at least resist becoming genetically mutated. So the question is, was there any evidence in a prospective manner to really say that continuing with anti-angiogenic treatment beyond the first line of anti-angiogenic treatment, obviously in this case bevacizumab, does really have any role in our thinking and for the future how we treat patients, but also how we approach this issue in terms of future clinical trials. So the first study, which was done in Europe, which is by Benona et al., which was published in Lancet Oncology, this looked into the continuation of bevacizumab after first progression metastatic colorectal cancer. It was a randomized phase 3 trial, and it took 4.5 years to complete the study, but there was some change in the sponsorship during that time that might have meant there was a bit of a delay in completing the trial. Nevertheless, they had over 800 patients, and patients who received chemotherapy plus bevacizumab in the front line, they progressed. In the second line, they switched their chemotherapy, and it was the investigator or treating physician's choice, and then they received either bevacizumab or no bevacizumab. And looking at the results, there was certainly an improvement in the overall survival of the patients with a hazard ratio of 0.81, but also improvement in the progression-free survival that was seen in the study, which supported the improvement in survival, because we all are facing this issue in colorectal cancer, what happens in the second, third, fourth line maybe, and whether that impacts the outcome of a study. And in the second line setting, most of the patients received irinotecan, close to 60%. And they did a number of subgroup analyses, but the benefit really was seen in all the subgroups except maybe in the gender, which I cannot explain why there was no real benefit, for example, in patients who were females. And the subgroup analysis also, and if you look at the stratification, you see that most of the patients in the study, more than 50%, were patients who progressed within the 9 months, and they used the 9 months as a progression point because of the past history or past experience with the use of bevacizumab in the frontline setting. So overall, the results of the trial supported what is being done in the community and by ourselves, but also we have to put into perspective, because the BRIGHT registry in the ARES came with a similar conclusion, but the magnitude was more in those situations, which again tells you that registries are registries and the prospective clinical trials have a different scientific weight and different impact maybe on how we treat patients.
Although I interpreted it as oncologists in practice just have some kind of better understanding how to pick the right patient.
We all have them, right? We've got these patients that we treat with first-line bevacizumab-based therapy who do wonderful. I mean, to me, it was a sign that we as community oncologists know who to continue Bev in and who not.
And I'm glad that they showed the improvement in the overall survival, because if it was only for progression-free survival in an unblinded trial, I would have been a bit concerned. But here you're seeing improvement in survival, which is what was the primary endpoint of this study. And again, one of the things in this trial, which is important related to what you asked us earlier, patients who did not have enough bevacizumab, so they're at a cutoff point of 3 months in terms of the use of bevacizumab prior to being randomized on the trial.
Randy, you had a comment?
Yeah, the only thing I would say is that the registries are set up to win, because what happens is that patients who are doing well are more likely to get something else thrown at them. So just that by itself, not so much just choice, but people who are living longer are more likely to live longer and more likely to get bevacizumab. So I think that, you know, this was a very modest benefit. I think what Phil said is really sort of worth repeating, rather than saying that, and I think the discussant was, I think Alan Vanook made that point very well about the danger of clinical practice on, you know, this, in some ways, yes, it's a modest benefit, but it really says that you have to beware of, and you probably shouldn't be doing, you know, your clinical practice necessarily on companies-funded registries.